Welcome to the Big Careers Small Children podcast. My name is Verena Hefti. I believe that no one should have to choose between becoming a CEO and enjoying their young children. For much too long, brilliant people have found themselves stuck on the career ladder when they have children, and that leads to gender inequality in leadership and the same stale, mostly male, middle-class people leading our organizations. We absolutely must change this, and I hope that many of you listening right now to this podcast will progress to the most senior leadership roles possible in a way that works for you and for your families, so you can make the decisions that make our world and our organizations better places. Beyond the podcast, I am the CEO and founder of the social enterprise Leaders Plus, which is all about giving parents the support and space to progress to senior leadership in a way that works for them and their families. We have lots of free events and also lots of resources on leadersplus.org, where you can download helpful toolkits such as on returning from maternity leave, or securing a promotion as a working parent, or thriving or surviving, depending how you look at it, as a dual career couple. We also have an award-winning global fellowship program for working parents who have big dreams for their careers but don't want to sacrifice everything for it. You will join a tight-knit, supportive group of people. You'll get space to think about what you want for your life, for your family, for your career, a senior leader mentor, and a lot of targeted support in order to get you where you would like to be. And you can find all that on leadersplus.org/fellowship for the details. The next application deadline is on 20th March 2024, and you can download the brochure on leadersplus.org. In today's conversation, we talk about thriving and progressing your career to senior leadership level in a very male-dominated industry. We talk about being ambitious and whether that's a bad thing, and we discuss introducing flexibility in an industry that thinks it can't be done. Enjoy the conversation.
I'm Polly Ogden Duffy. I'm the managing director of John D. Wood & Company, which is one of England's oldest estate agents, specializing in sales and lettings, both in London, country, and internationally. In my family, I've been married for over 10 years, and I have two young children, not so young anymore, 5 and 7 years old, so a boy and a girl.
Well, actually, that is still an age that needs quite intense intervention, I find sometimes. Sorry, that was the wrong word. But I also have a 5 and a 7 year old plus a nearly 3 year old at the time of recording. So yeah, they do need, surprisingly, still a lot of support, don't they, at this age?
Someone said to me, you're in the trenches when they're younger. And I thought that was a really good description of having young children and working when it's quite full on. I thought it was a great expression. I don't feel quite so much that I'm in the trenches because they're a little bit more able, they're at school. And I think that changes things. It gives you different challenges.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm going to ask you a question I ask of all my guests, which is, what have you changed your mind on in terms of combining a big career with young children?
It's a good question. I'm not sure I've changed my mind on anything, but I think when you're young, I certainly was quite naive. I always knew I'd want to have a family. I was always very career focused, and I was never willing to compromise on either of those things. Perhaps when I was in my early 20s, I didn't really recognize what that would mean in terms of the juggle of day-to-day life and running a business in sort of challenging times, but also brilliant times. So I think that in terms of my view on things now, I think that I'm just more aware. I think you learn a lot. I definitely think having a family, I can relate more to my employees. I think I've always been quite emotionally intelligent. That's not a great expression, but aware of people around me, how they might be feeling. But I think having children, you're very aware that people are often operating on very little sleep. And I think it's incredible women and men that go to work, juggle young children. It's seriously full on.
Did you realize when you started working in that industry that it was quite a pressurized, quite a male-dominated industry, or did that not even cross your mind at the time?
I don't know. I mean, it didn't really cross my mind. I think I grew up in a very male-heavy family. So my mum passed away quite young. I was brought up by my father and three brothers. So extremely competitive environment. with sports and, you know, at the dinner table and absolutely everything. So it never really crossed my mind. I think as I've got older, I've realized that, you know, that perhaps there certainly were, the industry that I work in was particularly male dominated when I joined, but it didn't bother me at all. Because I was very used to being around men and always thought I can run as fast as they can. And it didn't really cross my mind. But I think what people have asked me in the last few years was, you know, who was the female role model in your industry that you looked up to? And I mean, there wasn't one, and there probably aren't that many to this day, but it's never really crossed my mind because I've had incredible male role models. So I think as long as people are brilliant, in they can come in whatever shape, form they like. But yes, it's something I'm probably more aware of because people ask the question.
That's fascinating. And what do you think made you get to the level of managing director? Because it's one thing to do well in an industry where you're the minority. And I get your point that you never, it sounds like you actually never saw yourself as different, or you didn't question whether or not you could do it because of the way you were brought up. But you didn't just thrive in that industry. You got to the very top. Do you think there's something unique that enabled that to happen?
I think as a person, I'm particularly ambitious. I think that growing up, when my mother was alive, she worked very hard and worked through four children and so set out a very good work ethic, which to me just struck me as completely normal. So I think that in my career, everything I can have tomorrow, I want today. And I'm naturally very competitive. So I want to be the best at what I can do. And I'm just, I've always wanted to strive to do better, to go up the ranks. And it's just, and I think because I love what I do, it's really easy because it's something that I just live and breathe. I, you know, my job is dealing with people and dealing with property. And I find property absolutely fascinating because it represents a happy home life, but investment could be interior design, development. It's generally the heart of every family. There is a home. And that's probably what started me out in that career right at the beginning. And then the other part of working in property and ultimately starting out as an estate agent is I just love being around people. I love eccentric personalities. I think it's what lights up the world, really, just having people who, you know, meeting different people from different walks of life every day. And I never wanted to really be stuck behind a desk. So, you know, I think being an estate agent, which is what I am, although I don't sell houses in the same way that I used to, it's all about relating to people and listening and understanding what people need or they think they need or guiding them. It's a bit of a counselling job at sometimes, but you know, it's something that I've always really, really enjoyed. So I think whenever you do something that you do enjoy, it's quite easy to look at it and think, God, I could do that better, or imagine if we did it this way, because you want the process to be seamless. And I think that that just was a natural drive.
I'm really struck by your use of the word ambitions. You're not coming across as apologetic for it at all. That really resonates with me, because when I set up the Social Enterprise Leaders Plus, I did it because I could not find anybody who seemed to believe you could be ambitious and also have a family. I got a really strong message that you needed to choose. And so that's why I set up the Leaders Plus Fellowship Program, which essentially brings together people who are ambitious unapologetically with each other and supports them to progress their careers, you know, to get promotions and so on. But it's interesting. I've never met someone who doesn't feel bad. We've actually even taken the word ambitious out of our marketing, or we've toned it down a bit because we know it creates such a strong emotion. People feel guilty about being ambitious. How has your, has that changed your relationship with the word?
I think maybe it's because I work in sales. So, you know, it is competitive. You have to be ambitious, and you also have to pick yourself up when times are hard. So you have to be a real self-motivator. So I've never considered ambition a bad thing. But I think, you know, if you ask me the question, I am ambitious. But I think that I've always believed that you should be able to have it all. And I think particularly with three brothers who have quite successful careers and families, why shouldn't you be able to, you know, get married, have children, also be as successful? And I think that maybe that I've had a point to prove, I think, along the way. I want to be able to run as fast as everybody else. And I feel very, very strongly that women can have it all. Yeah, it's important to me.
Controversial as well, which I love. some people do say you can't have it all. I'm with you. I think you can have it all in your own way. You're not going to be able to be the perfect parent, the perfect leader. You'll be really good in a way that works for you, and you'll make a difference in the world. But my question is, a lot of people say they had to change who they are to become, you know, CEO or managing director, as in they have to start acting like a man. Do you subscribe to that, or do you think that's rubbish?
I think I've never considered you need to act like a man. I think you need to act like the best version of a woman. But for me, you know, I appreciate that every woman has different goals, and perhaps I'm the exception. Now, I'm very career focused. I know that there are lots of women who are very career focused, and there are lots of women that want to, you know, stay at home with their children, and that is also really, really important. But and I think you have to be respectful of people making their own choices and decisions. So I think that, I mean, a good example of that, you know, I've reached the role that I am in today. I've worked very, very hard. I've made huge personal sacrifice along the way, for sure. At times it's been incredibly hard. And I think that in terms of losing yourself, I think that for any woman who has young children, you have to be incredibly selfless. That's what happens when you have children. So for me, I want to be seen as a good role model to them in terms of going out to work every day. And of course, everything I do is for them. But outside of work, I dedicate all of my time to them. So I am that taxi service on the weekend that takes those kids to football and to wherever they need to be. And my goodness, you know, you go to work and you're dressed in your, you know, smart in your heels, and in the weekend I'm in my mum jeans and a jumper and I'm rolling around in the mud. You know, that's life, and that's what, you know, that for me is amazing. I just wanted to be able to do both. And I think that as somebody, I think if I stayed at home full time, I think I'd struggle from an intellectual point of view. And I also think that women that stay at home are incredible, because I would struggle with that. And I think I recognize that I sort of, going back to that point, that perhaps I'm more of the exception to the rule in terms of, you know, being very career focused or going back to work quite quickly after maternity leave. But women who work for me, for those women that want to take, you know, their full entitlement, I absolutely support that and encourage that, because we're all different. And I've always been very clear that with my sort of direct team, just because I do one thing doesn't mean I expect that of you. And you should do what is right for you. And you have my full support every step of the way. And I think that that's important.
Definitely. And I think it's really important to be able to talk to other people who are going through this experience, like you're talking to your peers or your direct reports, because it can be hard to find what is right for you, and you need support to think that through.
But I think to that point, it's probably worth saying, I think in my team, obviously I've got men and women that work for me. And I think that over the more recently, you know, in years, you know, women have come to me perhaps, you know, suffering from a miscarriage or fertility issues. And I never wanted to be the boss that they didn't feel they could talk to about that or have the support, because certainly having been in a position myself over the years where perhaps you might be having a miscarriage or something, you didn't feel you could be honest about that in the workplace. I wanted to be the opposite of that for my team, because I wanted people to be able to say, I'm having a really difficult time right now and I'm not on my best form. And I wanted to be the boss that said, look, I've got your back. You come first. We'll look after this. You go and do you, and look after yourself, because that's the most important thing in life. So I've really tried to create a culture where some of the things that are really not spoken about, whether it's miscarriage, fertility for men and women, menopause, in the company that I work in, I've worked very, very hard to make it less of a taboo subject and a comfortable environment for my teams to be able to talk without fear of feeling like that might impact their careers.
That sounds great. And you spoke about the sales environment earlier. And that's always interesting to me, because it is such a, especially if you're a numbers driven person, you'll think about it, won't you? And you're really ambitious, and it was at the top of your, you know, anytime someone asks you, you will remember exactly where you are with your sales targets and so on. And I think it's really hard to switch off from those type of jobs sometimes. And I wonder whether, as a super driven at work person, how do you make the shift to being present with your children? Or is that something that comes natural to you?
Oh, gosh, no. I mean, I think being present is a fantastic expression. And that is something that I really try very hard to do, whether I'm in a meeting with someone at work or at home with my kids. you know, having your phone in your hand, or, you know, just not, you can be in a meeting with someone and you could be meeting with a colleague and they could feel like you're not interested. It's really important to be present in everything you do. And I definitely don't get it right. I try very, very hard to do that. And of course, there'll be times where there's something particularly pressing happening, either at work or at home. That's the challenge, isn't it? At that point, you really need to lean on support around you. But I'm so much better at it than I ever was. And I also recognize that years ago, you know, I might have a really super busy diary and you'd think that that meant that you were really succeeding. And actually, it's really important to have time set out in your diary to think, reflect, to create strategy and to react and be proactive. And I think without that time, really for any leader, you really won't be as successful as you need to be.
I want to ask you about managing perception. So, in our fellowship program, we quite often have our working parents and that we support talk to each other about how to deal with these sometimes unvoiced expectations. And they're not always unvoiced. Actually, we did a piece of research with about 1,000 working parents, and 44% of the mums said they have been receiving comments around commitment once they had children related to their childcare role. So things like, oh yeah, I know that now you don't want to progress your career anymore, or I know that you are, your family takes priority, which of course is absolutely fine. And in the end, your family does take priority. But have you experienced these challenges? And if yes, how did you deal with them?
I'm a huge advocate for flexible working. And I think particularly in the industry that I work in, flexible working historically has been deemed really as a place for people that aren't serious about coming to work. And I really try to make a point of, you know, expressing some of the best people that have ever worked for me that have produced the best results are the mums that have worked 3 days a week or the 4 days a week, because there's less chat, more focus. They're there to deliver a job. They're there to make money to feed their children. And my God, they're amazing. So I think that that's important. I think great performers are people who are focused. And I think that when you're a part-time worker, you're totally focused on getting the job done. So I think that I do recognize, of course, I remember when I came back from maternity leave after my first child and I moved to 4 days a week. In hindsight, probably not the best thing, because 4 days a week meant that I was doing 5 days a week in four, and that created incredible stress at the time. So I quite quickly changed that, I think, after 6 months to a year. I don't think I felt entirely comfortable with being paid 80% of the money for doing 100% of the job. And I think that that's really important, that if you change your working hours, that you're clear on the definition of what's going to sit outside of your remit. But now I do work full-time hours. I have a slightly compressed hours, compressed setup where, you know, one afternoon a week I'm there to collect my kids from school. And I think as they've got older, they'll be I'm quite flexible on that. I recognize that business is business and things can happen. I might need to be somewhere else. But I think certainly from a flexible working point of view and from a commitment point of view, I really encourage my teams and people who perhaps work for me who are less keen on flexible working to understand the benefits. Because I think if you look after your people, the results look after themselves. So if I've got someone that works for me and they want to, you know, take their children to school twice a week or make sure they can go to their children's shows or whatever that is, 100% we should support that, because that's what a great employer does. And I think that those are the sorts of things that people leave businesses for. And I think one of the things that we're most proud about in our business is that people stay, and we're a mature business. We're not this sort of, we're not short-sighted in our approach that people come and work for us and, you know, they burn out. You know, people will work with us from in their 20s up until their 70s. And you have a life journey. So you might have children. You might need flexible working for a few years. You might need to work from home at times. And I think that to be the amount of people that we employ that come to us who have been told by their employer in our industry, it's an absolute no, we're not considering it at all. You know, their loss is our gain, because we open, you know, welcome with open arms. And can't always accommodate things, but we'll do our best. And I think that's really important.
I find that very, very inspiring, because there are certain industries, and I'm sorry to say that property is one of them, where there's a very, very clear message saying flexible work is great, however, it doesn't work for us.
No.
And clearly that's, you're saying this is not the case. So and you're telling us the results is what is going to show, because you're, you know, your organization is doing financially really well. I'm interested what you said about the 4 day, you know, working 4 days, being paid five, because again, that's a topic, as you can imagine, that comes up a fair bit. Sorry, the other way around.
I know what you mean.
So how do you, in a industry like yours that is very client driven, how do you make sure you do not work really long hours for lower pay?
Oh, it's very difficult, because even for our full-time workers, we're in an international business. And I think that there's, you know, our client might be in the US or in Australia, and you might put your children to bed and they'll want to talk to you at 9 o'clock at night. And I think that in any sales business, you need to have a degree of flexibility, but it's also in the individual's, you know, best interest perhaps to be flexible. But I think you need to be a flexible employer in the first place as well to support that. So if someone puts in significantly extra hours out of time, then, you know, that's fine. You know, just let us know and take the time back. But I think in all of this, it's about having a supportive working environment and having colleagues that support you, because I know that I work with a lot of mums and dads who, you know, might have a parents' evening or might have something that happens unexpectedly. And that's fine, because, you know, that's life. And it would be naive to think that that isn't the case. So I always try to make sure that I can support my teams. And I know that ultimately, if I say I'm going to a school assembly tomorrow, because that's the most important thing in my day tomorrow, because it will mean the world to my child, they wouldn't dream of thinking, oh no, you know, why has she gone off to do that? Because my expectation of my teams is that they do that, because it make, you know, a happy sort of life outside of work really impacts the workplace as well.
Definitely. I am also intrigued with the point around convincing other employers. So it strikes me that you're a bit of an informal change maker, just by showing in your organization that it can be done. When you meet your average older, white, middle class, or maybe upper class male who runs an organization like yours and who tells you flexible working, it's not really for us. What do you tell them?
I mean, I don't think I meet many people like that in the business that I work for. And I work for a company that's owned by the Skipton Building Society. So it's the leading property services company in the UK. But there definitely are many people that I meet in the industry. And I struggle to, I just think in this day and age, it's almost laughable, because it's so archaic in approach to think that the world has moved on. I think as a business, we do struggle to be as flexible as others. So it's a bit like a hairdresser. You know, if you work as a hairdresser in a shop, you can't cut someone's hair from home unless you're self-employed, but you have to be there. And we work in shops, you know, most of our estate agents, and you can't view a house or show someone around a house from home. That's the reality of it. But there are parts of the role, or different parts of our business, where flexibility does lend itself, or working from home. But I think that definitely with the younger generation, they are more outspoken. They are less willing to compromise. They're very sure that their personal well-being and sort of satisfaction in the workplace is priority. So businesses need to succeed, need people of every demographic and age and across the board. So I think the world has changed so much, and you have to lead from the front. And I think that it, for those businesses where there really is a lack of flexibility, you can see it in their workforce, and it's a very different culture. And actually, it tends to lose its way. You see that quite a lot. And again, I sort of go back to, we meet brilliant people that come to work for us who have perhaps had a baby, or it could be a man or a woman, who want a degree of flexibility. And the answer is no, before they've even started. And, you know, there are, you do have rights around flexible working, and there are grounds on which you have to approve or not approve. And I think there's just a lack of education around it. And I think once you've seen it work fantastically well, and it has to be managed properly, then I'd like to think people would be a convert, but you don't know. So
I think it's one of those things where I firmly believe that in 20 years' time, things that are acceptable nowadays, like saying no for a random reason, not really a business reason, on flexible working, which is done unofficially, that those things are just not going to be acceptable anymore. And I do really think the world is going to change, because 20, 30 years ago, we all worked 6 days a week and now we don't anymore. So I think I'm very, very hopeful, but it needs people like you, like us, who just are slowly, slowly showing that it is different to live in a different way.
I think that as I've got older, not too old, but older and perhaps more confident, I think perhaps that comes with, you know, having success in your career, but perhaps becoming a parent as well. I recognize that I have a voice, and it would be a lot easier for me not to stick my head up above the parapet and just go with the flow. But actually, I wouldn't say I'm a feminist, but I feel strongly about certain things. And if I feel that something is wrong or someone is not being treated fairly, then I can't help myself but to stick my hand up and go, no, actually, I don't think that's right. We need to change this or do better. And I think that comes back to some of the policies that I've changed in the workplace. You know, there's been huge press around menopause in the last few years. And, you know, it's a bit of a taboo subject. Nobody wants to talk about women going through the menopause. And I'm not saying particularly that I do, but I also recognize that a large part of my workforce will be going through the menopause and they need support. And perhaps there are less women in senior roles. So I think I have a responsibility to say, I think we need to do better. And we need to stick our hand up and say, this is our commitment to you, because I don't want anyone to ever leave our business because they were going through something and we didn't support them, because that's life and that's reality. And we've got an obligation to support our employees. So since rolling out our menopause policy in particular, it's not just the women in the business that have reached out, it's the men. It's the men who've reached out to say, do you know, I'm so glad you've released this policy because, you know, my wife has been going through challenges and I just, you know, think this is great. And I just think that sometimes talking about the difficult subjects is, it just puts it on the radar of more people.
Yeah, it is interesting to hear that. I want to come back to your own story. And I was wondering, you come across as someone so, you know, comfortable in their skin and at ease. Did you ever play with the thought, even for just a moment, of saying, I'm just going to leave and be a housewife? Or did that never cross your mind?
I always need a project. So I think, you know, I think I would really struggle not to be in the workplace. I'm always looking for that next project, whether it's my child doing something or refurbishing a house. I like to be busy. And more often than not, people have said to me, gosh, you're taking on too much. Why do you do this? But I perform best probably under pressure. But look, I think if I come across as comfortable and confident, that just like any woman, I think there have been many, many challenges along the way. I've had people throughout my career tell me, you won't succeed, you won't do this, you won't be good enough. And that just drives me. And there's been huge challenges along the journey. And I think, as I said, you know, after my second child, I returned to work after 12 weeks. That's the hardest thing I've ever done. And I would say it nearly broke me. But I don't regret it. I would do it again. But it was hard. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. And at that point, my previous boss had passed away and I needed to be in the business. And if I wasn't back in the business, then I probably wouldn't be in the role that I'm in today. And I made that choice. But I operated on very little sleep. But I felt responsibility to the people in the business and the teams to drive that business forward, because I absolutely love the business that I work for and worked for many years to build this business. So it's definitely not been a smooth journey. I think that, like many people along the way, you can doubt yourself, think, are you doing this right? Have I got this right? Am I doing the right thing? It doesn't help when you speak to either men or women that say, God, you went back to work after 12 weeks. I mean,
I wish we could take a picture of your facial expression just now. That's exactly it. There's a picture of shock that usually comes on people's faces as soon as they hear you. I was working as well when my second was 3 months old. I was working and yeah.
It's hard. And I think I go back to that point where people say, you know, I don't want the people that work for me to think that that's my expectation of them, because I might be totally mad, but you may not be. And that's absolutely fine. But for me, that was the right thing to do. And it hasn't impacted my lovely daughter, who is full of beans, bright, intelligent, goodness me. And just, we have the most wonderful relationship. But it was just a compromise at that time.
Yeah, I just want to use some of the time to talk about sleep, because you have brought it up. So how did you survive?
Was it just that you barely survived?
Oh my God, I'm not sure.
Planning today, which was a stroke of luck, or how did you survive? Because it is so tough when they don't sleep.
Well, I think when my first child was about two, I suddenly recognised, I didn't really have a point to prove anymore, that actually if I wanted to go to bed at 8 o'clock, my husband would have to put up with it and that was okay. I would go to bed at 8 o'clock. But I did quite often with a baby wake up at around 4 a.m. to feed the baby. And then at that point, it's quite difficult to go back to sleep. So I would tend to probably get up, feed the baby around 4. And then by, I think I'm crazy as I say this, 4:35, I think, well, I might as well just get up for the day, do a little bit of work, and then I could be in the office super early. I've got a wonderful husband. But for me, I'm always home to put those children to bed. That's my time. So I'm a real early morning person. But so I would say what I did was go to bed early, probably start the day earlier than everybody else. The quiet time when no one else is up is wonderful. And no one else is in the office because no one can talk to you. You could just get so much more work done. But yeah, I think that was the routine that I fell into. I'm not in that anymore. But that was probably my 12 or 18 months of madness.
Yeah. And this makes me laugh because there's something about 4 a.m. That is exactly it. And by that time, I was often up as well and doing stuff. So I'm sure a lot of listeners will be able to.
Yeah. My PA says to me, I've noticed that your children must be sleeping better because you tend to not email me at 5 a.m. anymore. And I was thinking, God, did I used to do that? I mean, obviously, I didn't expect her to read it. But, you know, sometimes, you know, once your brain's wearing, you're off.
Exactly. But what is also good to just remember as we hear the story is that it has been a phase and it is over for the most part. And of course, as we're recording this, I was also up at 4 a.m. because my poor daughter was a little bit ill. She's fine now and happy, but she was ill in the morning. And then, you know, it still does happen, but you do function. And I think, yeah, you can also learn a lot around emotional self-control because you're so much more responsive when you're tired. And if you're able to control yourself when you're tired, you're able to control yourself in most settings, I think.
I remember when my son was 4 weeks old, he's my firstborn. And I said to my husband, I just don't think I'm ever going to sleep again. Is that the reality? And I now, many years later, I realized that everything passes, everything changes, and actually it gets easier. Different challenges, but you know, it's the best thing I'll ever do having children. But my God, it was and is the hardest, but the most rewarding.
Absolutely. So you mentioned you didn't have that many female role models. Was there anyone who has given you advice or has said something to you that shaped your approach fundamentally of how you are combining family and work?
My mother had quite an impact on me, I think. She obviously wanted a large family. She worked for the Metropolitan Police and often would work in night and then come home, get us up for school, take us off to, you know, to school. And I think that she set this very... probably idolized her a bit. She passed away when I was 10 years old. But, you know, I just, those first 10 years of your life really form your view. And so I think that had quite a big impact. But I think in the workplace, I've had fantastic mentors. I've also had, I've had brilliant bosses. I've also had not so great bosses. So I used to work for someone who, and this was many, many years ago, long before I was ever thinking of having children. And I realized every time a woman was pregnant, they tended not to come back to work after maternity leave and they suddenly were made redundant. And I thought, my God, I didn't realise at the time because I was, you know, a real baby. But I very quickly realised I never wanted to be like that. And then, you know, had fantastic mentors along the way who've just been brilliant and advising. And I think everybody needs a mentor. I think that's really, really important. Someone that can coach you. They haven't been women.
Well, in that case, you know what, you can say yes or no afterwards, but I'm going to ask you if you would be interested in being a mentor on our Leaders Plus Fellowship program. Think about it. We'll talk you through what it means. But yeah,
I can give it a good shot.
So awesome. I'll put you in touch with Helen, who leads the mentoring program. Yes, as I mentioned, we have this 9-month program. It's very structured and lots of peer group, but there is a real... there's something really powerful about having someone who is just a few steps ahead of you. They might not be that much wiser, but they just have this additional perspective and can help you say
very
that.
Grounding, I think. Yeah, very exactly. Grounding, very... you can be having the biggest challenge and actually someone can just cut through it and go, well, this is, you know, just help you give you perspective.
I agree.
I think that's important.
I agree. I am going to challenge you to a very small step people can take. So at the end of each podcast, we always ask our guests about a small thing that our listeners can take. And I would like to ask you if you have any maximum 5-minute step someone can take who wants to make sure they can progress their careers in a male-dominated environment.
Ooh, okay. I think that everybody needs a plan. So you need to start with the end in mind, even if that's the where you want to be in 5 years. If you don't know where you're going, you're never going to get there. So I think it's really important to focus on where it is and what it is you want to get to. If you can find a brilliant mentor along the way, someone who, not necessarily in your workplace, but someone who can advise you, probably not a family member, so they're not quite so biased, I think that's important. I would definitely say that if you work for someone who doesn't encourage you and support you and empower you to be the best that you can be, then it's probably time to move on. I think that having a great boss is really, really important. I think, you know, sometimes people will come to me and that, you know, they're going for a promotion, and the best thing you can have from a boss is someone that supports you and encourages you, even if it means you won't be working for them anymore. I think it's important, particularly in the workplace, not to be emotional. I think that facts around, you know, particularly if you're talking about pay rises or situations and you might tricky situations you need to tackle, to be factual, always approach problems with solutions. Particularly if you're trying to get a desired outcome, it's really important to propose a solution rather than, you know, suggest the problem, which can often just be seen as a complaint. But yeah, I think that's probably about it. I hope that gives you something.
Thank you so much for sharing your perspective and for framing it in such a practical way. If people want to find out more about your work, about what you do, where should they head?
So my company is johndwood.co.uk, or you can find me on LinkedIn, Polly Ogden Duffy, and always very happy to hear from people. So please do reach out.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening today. And a special thank you to all of those of you who have connected with me on LinkedIn in the last few weeks. I really, really love hearing from listeners and hearing how you enjoyed the show. So it means a lot. Thank you so much. If you would like to be in touch in real life, do consider joining the Leaders Plus Fellowship program. It is such a fantastic community of working parents supporting each other to find a way to get careers where you can make a big difference in senior roles, but also do that unapologetically in a way that works for us. And if you want to apply, then the deadline is 20th of March. You can download the brochure for the program on leadersplus.org. Podcasting is also quite a male-dominated environment. If you look at the top charting podcasts, especially outside of the kids and family space, very often it's all led by men. I can't remember the numbers, but it is very male dominated. Just take a look at the charts. And interestingly enough, more females than males listen to podcasts. So another unequal space. And thank you for supporting this podcast by listening to it. But if you want to help us, I guess, have more influence in the space, then please do help by sharing it with your friends and by leaving a 5-star review. Thank you so much to all of those of you who have done that already. Have a wonderful week.